meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, everyone. Good day. This is Brenda speaking. Welcome to Yes, Who Is to plenary call number 39 on 20th of August, 2018 at 1500 UTC. Attending the call today, Alan, Dimitri, Carlton, Susan, Lily, and Stephanie. From ICANN.org, Alice, Maggie, Lisa, Brenda, Trang, and Owen, and Volker has just joined us. We have apologies, which are delayed, apologies for being delayed, from Catherine, Erica, and Chris. No observers have joined at this time. Today's call is being recorded. May I please remind you to state your name before speaking? And Alan, I'll turn the call over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And first of all, are there any changes to statement of interest? Seeing nothing, hearing nothing, we'll presume not. This is a relatively important call. It is the call immediately before next week's call where we plan to finalize and approve the final report. The final draft report, or the draft final report. So we still have a number of areas of changes that have been made either since last week or changes that we have not been able to review yet, coming out of effectively out of the work following the third face-to-face meeting in Brussels. And with that, unless there is anyone who has any other items they would like to either add to the agenda or to modify the agenda, and I'll give people a moment to make comments. And hearing nothing, seeing nothing, we'll accept the agenda and proceed. The first item on our agenda is data accuracy. And Lisa, I'll turn the call over to you to raise whatever issues you want first and turn it over to the rapporteur.
Thanks, Alan, and this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the transcript. So you'll see on this slide the refined language for the new recommendation in the data accuracy section with regard to looking for potential anomalies in ARS results with a particular example of the 40% of ARS-generated tickets closing with no action because the record, the WHOIS record, has changed before the ticket is processed. The reason that we asked the compliance team to join us on this morning's call was to perhaps try to get some more clarity around that number of 40% of tickets being closed with no action because the WHOIS record has changed. Maggie and team previous discussion on that within this group generated a number of questions for you. The most recent answer, I think, is what's linked here on this slide. But there was sort of a general feeling that 40% of records actually having changed in that time window of 3 or 4 months between ticket generation and processing seemed rather high, and so the team was looking for perhaps some more clarity around the reasons that the records might have changed or anything that you see when you go ahead and process the ticket that you receive from ARS that causes those records to be closed with no action. And Lily, I'd invite you, I don't know if you're able to speak, but I'd invite you to add any thoughts that you had.
Yeah, and it's Alan. I'll have a quick comment afterwards.
Thank you, Lisa. This is Lily for the record. Yeah, I also had the impression that for today's plenary call, we will have colleagues from the compliance team and the GDD team to give us some clarifications on the situation. Actually, the concern was arised from the third face-to-face meeting in Brussels last month, and the whole review team had the concerns about the high ratio of the WHOIS record changed during just a relatively short period of time. We want some more clarifications about the situation. This is all from my side.
Thank you. It's Alan speaking. Thank you, Lily. I guess I want to try to rephrase the question in a different way. The ACURA's reporting study selects domain registrations at random. They find a relatively significant number of those to have something which causes them to pass it on to contractual compliance, which is an important statement in its own right. But the numbers we see, say 40% of them are changed such that there is no need to contact the registrar. If 40% of all nominally inaccurate records change automatically in a few months with no action, then we should be going down to almost no errors going forward, because if we change 40% per few months, we should be turning over all of them statistically in a relatively short time. That clearly isn't happening, which is what has raised the red flags to try to understand why of these particular ones are we getting changes made which remove the inaccuracy flag. But clearly it's not happening on everyone. So that's the what we're trying to understand. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Maggie Surad from Contractual Compliance. With me on the call is Owen, and we hope we will be able to address the questions you have for us related to who is ARS. The first thing I just want to remind everyone is that registration does change, as we all know. We see it in our normal day-to-day processing of records. But in the case of Who is ARS, as it's noted on the Who is ARS website, the processing and reviewing of this data takes anywhere from 4 to 5 months from the date it's selected to the date it's cleaned up and uploaded for contractual compliance to process through them. With that, I'm going to ask Owen to speak a little bit about the closure of the Who is ARS, and hopefully we bring clarity to the concerns.
Thank you, Maggie. This is Owen Smigelski from ICANN Contractual Compliance. The question you're saying is it raises a flag that, say, 40% of them or whatever those metrics are closed because the data has changed. Just to reiterate what Maggie said, we do see quite a bit within the Who is ARS tickets, as well as other Who is NACSI tickets, transfer tickets, that Who is data is not static. It changes. So there might be an update to the telephone number or an email or a domain name transfer. There's a number of reasons why we see Who is records change. And I don't think that's necessarily something inconsistent with or anomalous for this complaint type versus others. We see this all the time. So I can't necessarily speculate to the number of reasons why the WHOIS data may change, but given that time period, the data does change. And so when we see them, the reported error is no longer present in the WHOIS. That's why they're closing. There's a possibility that there could be an inaccuracy in there, but because that hasn't been analyzed or reviewed or that information provided to compliance, because it is different, that's why we close it.
So it's Alan. It's Alan. So you're saying you close it because the specific inaccuracy is not there, not because you now verify that it meets accuracy standards.
Yes, when that resolve code, which says who is data when ticket processed different from sampled who is data, all that means is whatever error or alleged inaccuracy, reported inaccuracy, that the who is ARS identified, say telephone number, we can see the who is data at the time it was sampled, as well as the who is data at the time of ticket creation. And if they're different, then that reported inaccuracy is not there, so we close it as inconsistent.
It's Alan. I have a follow-up question. We know it takes several months to get from the ARS sampling to when it's brought to contractual compliance. is that the day the ticket is opened, or do you have some processing to do because you get a whole pile of them at once? What is the when is it sampled? Is it when the day it arrives or when you first have a chance to look at it?
This is Owen again. So there's actually a couple of who is data points that are captured. When the ticket is when the ticket is created, it includes the data from the sample. There's a whois lookup at the time the ticket is created, and if there is a delay in processing, every time we touch a ticket, we look up the whois data as well too. And we have the opportunity, the ability to append that to the ticket so we can compare over time. So it is possible that it may have just changed right before being processed or a number of other times.
Susan.
Thanks, Alan. Susan Talbot, you've the record. Thanks, Owen, for the input, but I'm just not understanding. I've looked at, I don't know, thousands upon thousands of whois history, and you just don't see a change of to the whois record at that volume and in that time period, you know, in a 4 to 6 month time period, except maybe, you know, a renewal date, some other type of status that would not be part of the data that you're validating. So could you give us concrete examples of what you've seen, when you first see the domain name that's put on the list from ARS, you know, what they've claimed was inaccurate, and then what you're seeing. It'd be helpful to really sort of walk through a record.
So, I'm not looking at a specific record here, but ones that we've seen it'll state such as, the address, the postal address is incorrect, and you look now, they've enabled privacy proxy service, so that inaccuracy is gone. Or it'll state that the email address is not deliverable, and the email address in current whois is different. We do find this even with other whois inaccuracy complaints, that somebody will submit a complaint about an inaccuracy, and when it gets to compliance, it's already been updated and changed. Inaccurate data gets corrected sometimes without us having to follow up on that, but those are just a couple of samples, examples, and others as well. But there's a number of reasons why the whois data can change, and when you're dealing with thousands of records, those do come up.
So, in the ARS process, are they notifying the registrants at all?
Can you clarify at what point?
So, when a domain name record is selected for the ARS program, is there any notification at that point just for being selected to the registrant?
No, there's no notification. The only point where there may be some type of contact with the registrant is if it's processed as whois inaccuracy complaint and forwarded to the registrant as per the RAA would require.
So maybe that's where the disconnect is for me. So ARS looks at, to validate the email address, they'd have to reach out to the registrant, though.
I'm not familiar with the details of the testing, but I do know that there is a possibility of checking to see if a mailbox exists on a mail server as opposed to actually sending and expecting a reply.
Yeah, I thought they just do syntax, actually.
Okay.
There are two checks that they do with ARS. There's a syntactical check, and then there's also a operability check. So they will check syntax, is the email address something at something dot something, basically
right.
What that test is. But then they actually do test email addresses.
Yeah, that kind of test will not normally notify the recipient unless they're running their own mail server and have alerts added into it. Susan, anything else?
Yeah. So we're only talking about email address, physical address, phone number. Is fax included in that? Remind me, I'm just not remembering right this second.
I'm not sure, Susan, off the top of my head, if that's included in there. I would have to refer back to the ARS. I'm not familiar with that.
I think syntax of it is, Alan speaking.
So when you get these records for those four fields, 40% have changed. I would have to see 1,000 records to understand this, because that makes absolutely no sense to me.
May I ask the next question?
Sure.
And how many of those 40% are not, you do not need to do anything because they have been deleted?
So this is Owen. That would actually be a separate metric there. There's domain not registered when ticket processed, or domain suspended or canceled.
That's over and above the 40%?
Correct. So, you'll see, just looking at the data from, cycle 5, still in process, looks like, there's a good, 25% or so that are either deleted or no longer registered, suspended or no longer registered.
Okay, I guess I'm confused even more now. I thought that you did take action on the 60%, that is 100 minus 40. So you're saying there are 60%, there are 40% that have been changed, and another 25% perhaps that have been deleted?
So if you look at the Who is ARS metrics? It's broken down by metrics to distinguish tickets that were closed before being sent to a registrar, and then tickets that received at least one notice, meaning that it was sent to a registrar. That was a community request to give those metrics differentiation. And so you can see for those that are closed before going to a first notice, the Who is data change was about 54%. Domain not registered or suspended is about 35% of the ones that were closed before being sent to a registrar. So that's not 40%. That's not 55% of all Who is ARS tickets. 55% that were closed before first notice.
Understood. So okay, the number we've been working with is 40 are closed before first notice to the registrar, 40%. I think those are the numbers that we have been working with. And that's certainly what our slide says that's displayed on the screen right now. 40% of ARS-generated tickets closed with no action because the record has changed, or is that a sum of changed or deleted?
Yeah, so you're saying 40% of ARS-generated tickets closed with no action. That's because, and then the reasons are enumerated there in the metrics. It's about a privacy proxy. It's a suspended, or it was a Whois format issue that was identified for a domain that was grandfathered.
Or deleted, I presume.
Yeah, the domain is not registered. That was for cycle 5. That was about 25% of the tickets. Of the ones closed before first notice.
Okay. So the 40% includes the closed. Trang, yes, I know the numbers vary from cycle to cycle, but the 40 number is the average that we have been using in this particular discussion. I don't know whether it's an average or came from a particular cycle. All right, we have hands. We have Lisa, and Volker had his hand up at one point. I don't know if he wants to go back in the queue. Lisa?
Thanks, Alan. I have asked if Jean-Baptiste or Alice can display on screen the table that's embedded on page 51 of our report. That is the table that Maggie has referred to in chat as the results of the most recent cycle, showing the percentages. And I believe, and Lily can elaborate on this if she wishes, but I believe that she summed up some of the percentages to come to the 40%, although it's been running from cycle to cycle, similar in that aggregate. Trang has also put in chat a link to the phase two cycle five, a link to the ARS validation for email operability checks. To Susan's point, exactly how the email is checked. I guess I'd like to invite Susan, maybe if you could elaborate a bit on what you were trying to look for there. Are you asking, or is the registrant aware that their email was checked, and could that prompt them to make the update, causing the update rate to be higher than you would have anticipated? Susan?
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. That is what I was getting at. I think what's not clear, and I'm sure the GDD and, you know, compliance team, it's probably clear to them, but in the report, it's confusing to me. So that's where, you know, reporting, pointing back to the report doesn't help for us because, you know, I've probably read each of these reports three or four times and still come up with the same question. So it would be really good to understand step by step by step from GDD and then compliance exactly the actions taken. So, because there could be just a loose thread in there that I have not picked up on, or Lily or several others, that we're just not grasping. So is it possible, Trang, for you to tell us exactly the process that is taken to select these domains, and then what actions are taken by GDD? Is that something you could help us with?
Yes, hi, I'm sorry, I had to connect on audio. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So, Susan, the methodology of the ARS report or study is actually in the report itself, but at a high level, so we engage an external vendor that assists us with a with the methodology to ensure that the sample that we pull is representative of the entire population of the WHOIS. And so based on those criteria, we pulled about approximately, I want to say 200,000 records, but the report would have the exact number. We pull approximately 200,000 records, and it gets sent to another vendor to that vendor, and that vendor then look at that population of records and call it down to approximately 12,000 records. That then go through the syntax and the operability checks. And I have put in the chat a link to what operability checks are. The syntax checks are the checks against the syntax requirements are in the RAA. After those checks are completed, both the syntax and the operability checks are completed, any potentially inaccurate records are then flagged and then sent over to compliance.
And then, this is Owen, and once the data file is received from us, compliance, we import it into our complaint processing system, and then they are, the WHOIS ARS tickets are processed alongside other WHOIS and accuracy tickets, the individual ticket submission, as well as the bulk submissions, and they are, like I said, they're processed the same way as the other WHOIS and accuracy tickets. The only caveat is other complaints. If we have a question for the reporter, we can follow up with the reporter and ask for some more information to clarify what the complaint is about. We don't have the option to do that with the ARS, so more often those would be closed as, say, incomplete rather than following up with the reporter to get more info. But other than that, they proceed just like every other WHOIS inaccuracy complaint. And then we also, if we do notice any concerns with the data, such as We forward it to a registrar, and they come back and they say that telephone number is correct. That's our telephone number, which I saw last week. We will actually flag that and provide that feedback to the GDD team so that they can follow up with either the processes or the vendors as needed.
So that's really helpful, but I'm still not seeing the disconnect. I think I have a little bit of a glimmer of where the problem might be, in my opinion, or where the, you know, why these are closed. But it would be good to see actual samples of, you know, this is the one we received, this is the domain name we received, this is the ARS has said this is not compliant, this is inaccurate. Then, you know, once it gets to you, we validated that. We don't agree with the inaccuracy report anymore. It's accurate now. It would be great to see some samples of those, and not a small sample, you know, anywhere from, like, I would like to see 1,000 records to see that, and be happy to check those and review those. I do know that from a personal experience, when reporting an inaccuracy report, I frequently get pushback on something I think is pretty obvious, and then don't have time to then respond to you again. It's just, things have moved on, and there's not enough time in the day to redo my own work sometimes. So I think that's where the disconnect could be on this, but I still do not agree that it could be 40%. I'm willing to be have my mind changed and show some data that I can actually sort of crunch myself. But other than this, I think there's an issue here that we need to dig out more.
Let's go through the queue and then decide how to proceed. We're clearly not going to clarify this completely today. Volker?
Yes, thank you. And Maggie and Owen, first of all, thank you very much for not forwarding all the complaints that the ARS provides to us, because that would probably overload our queues as well and take away time that we could deal with actual complaints. So thank you for doing those background checks and making sure that the complaints are still accurate and valid. Although I could think that the ARS could just do another query before they hand the data over and see if the data is unchanged, reducing your workload a bit. But I also am not necessarily of the opinion that seeing a 40% closure rate is necessarily a problem. That's just numbers that are there. If you can provide some more information of how the what the reasonings behind these numbers are, to convince those that remain unconvinced that these numbers are actually correct, that would be helpful. But I'm fine accepting them as they are at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Volker. Looking at the numbers on the screen, and I understand those are from our report, not our what is in our report, not something that has exclusively been published. But what I see there is the number of sample records, the number of tickets created, and then the number of tickets that went to first or second notice. I assume the difference between those two numbers is the number that are closed. Is that that are closed without contacting the registrar? Is that correct? Maggie or Owen?
Yes, Alan.
Okay. Thank you. So if you actually do the percentages, you find out that for those four samples, between 42 and 51% are tickets are issued, and therefore between 49 and 58% there are no tickets issued. So the numbers that are closed, in fact, are even larger than the 40%. And the rest of the numbers below, the order is a little bit confusing, but we've put it in because some of those are things that are closed prior to issuing the notice to the registrar, and some of them are reasons why it was closed before. So it's a little bit confusing. I have a suggestion going forward. I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the EPDP meeting in the end of September. I know Stephanie will probably be there. I don't think anyone else in this group is there, however. Does it make a lot of sense for me to spend an extra day and talk to spend some time with compliance staff and perhaps the ARS staff and try to understand more how these numbers are going? And Susan, maybe since you're moderately close, maybe you could come up at the same time and the two of us can spend the Thursday, which I think is the 27th of September, at least part of that time talking to compliance. Does that sound like a way going forward without exchanging an infinite number of emails and questions and try to get to the root of this? I guess I'm asking Maggie and Susan.
So this is Susan. That works for me. I'm actually in Southern California that week, actually on vacation, but I would be happy to drive over to the office and meet for several hours.
And Maggie, does that sound something you could agree to? We don't need firm agreement today, but we do soon because I have to make air travel reservations this week.
Yes, this is Maggie. I'm not clear what is it we are going to accomplish in this extra day, Alan. We're always happy to meet with you, so we're available to meet. I'm just want to set the expectation. If we can have a better understanding, what is it you're expecting to see and discuss and look at? And because not everything is compliance specific, so it has to start from the beginning. The ARS is a full cycle. We want to make sure we are meeting your expectations. So if you can tell us exactly what you're looking for, and we're happy to kind of set it up and work with you on it. Yes.
I'm without trying to define it on this call when we have a lot of other things to do, I think it would be a combination of making sure we really understand what the numbers are and what is the subset of what. And second of all, the potential perhaps for looking at a sampling of records to try to understand that. We of course, would be willing to sign non-disclosure agreements if that's appropriate. All right. Can we tentatively say we're doing that? Sorry?
Actually, Alan, I had a question. This is Trang.
Yes, Trang.
Yeah, so I can certainly check with the ARS team to see about availability. And we've done in previous cycles, not the latest one, I don't think, but in previous cycles, we've held webinars that also talks through the methodology for the ARS. So we can certainly go through another one of those presentations for you, and whoever else from the review team could come. And that should hopefully provide you with a clear understanding of the methodology that is used for the ARS portion of it, at least the generation of the records to be checked and the checking process themselves. Is that what you're sort of looking for? A better understanding of just the methodology, or because I'm not sure I understand where sort of the sample records come in.
Yeah, if the methodology has been presented in webinars, we'll do our homework and watch the webinar. I don't think we need to repeat something specially for us. We may have further on questions based on that.
Sure.
I think the problem is those of us who have spent a lot of time with Who Is Records find it rather anomalous that from randomly selected records with no notice to the registrar or registrant, that significant number of them are being corrected randomly, effectively, in the 4 or 5 month window that has occurred. Now, maybe it's simply that every registration has a 1 year renewal, and everyone is diligently looking at their information and saying, "Oh my God, I made a mistake last time." So the interaction with what the renewal date matters, But the numbers to those of us who have played this game for a while seem anomalous. And we are trying to understand why.
Yeah, I understand, and we're trying to figure out how to help you with that, I guess.
Yeah, and moreover, we're making a recommendation saying between ARS and compliance, they're going to have to look for these kind of anomalous things and not just pass on the statistics, but understand them. And we're trying to make sure that any recommendation we make actually makes some sense. All right, we have to move on. We're not making a firm commitment to do this right now, but I think we have a willingness of both the ICANN organization team and a few team members to do this. I don't give up an extra day of my life easily, but I will. And we need agreement from the review team, or at least the review team leadership, and I'll deal with Catherine separately, who is not here yet, that we'll put funding in for an extra day in Los Angeles for me and any cover any expenses that Susan might have. Does that sound reasonable to anyone? Does that sound unreasonable to anyone? Then we'll start trying to make detailed arrangements after this meeting. Any further comments on the section on who is accuracy?
Can I say something, Alan?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, my only difficulty with it is this. They tell you what the number of tickets that were closed before the first notice, and they give you the reason for the closure. If you look at the numbers across the reasons for the closure, that's where you have the variability, which is of interest to me and should be of interest to us. When you say, for example, in cycle 5, that you had a closure, cycle 4, you say the reason for the first closure was OIS data ticket process different from sample OIS data, and it's 49% of that. That makes kind of sense to me. Then you go to cycle 5, and the reasoning was the mean that registered when the ticket was processed, and that moves up from about 15% to 25%. Those variations in the numbers, when you break out the reason, I think is what is of interest. The fact that they have reasons for closure, I understand that. The variations themselves are what of interest. That's why that's
thank you. I'm not sure that changes our overall position, other than to add some clarity as to why we're confused. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. This is Lisa. In trying to reach closure on this section for the upcoming draft report, I wanted to make a suggestion, and that is to leave the description of this issue in the report so that the public comment period can allow people to elaborate on their thoughts on the issue, but possibly not to put forward a recommendation if you're not comfortable that the recommendation really gets at the issue. And if you're not happy with that suggestion, maybe some clarity around what you'd like to do with the recommendation. Thanks.
I'll give my completely off-the-cuff answer and then open it up to anyone else. I would prefer to keep the recommendation but add a note to it saying, due to the lack of clarity over exactly what is happening, the review team is further investigating in parallel with this report being issued. Maggie?
Thank you, Alan. I think I have a better understanding of what the confusion is about. Let us see what we can do from a compliance perspective. I think 1,000 records, as Susan was recommending, is a bit overwhelming. But let us see, because we are in the process of looking at who is ARS records as we continue our work here. I'll ask the team if we can, because it's all manual, if we can take a sample to reflect of how do we work through that? As Owen said, a reported issue, no matter what time or when it's reported, before we touch it and forward it, we do a WHOIS lookup. And what we can do is show you, let's see, we need to figure out how we can present the data to you so you can see this is what we received, this is when we looked at, when we started processing it, how it looked like that generated this error. This is all very manual, so let me see what our bandwidth and how between now and September we can pull some of this data, at least a sample, so you have a better understanding. And that is if I understood Susan's concern correctly.
We can talk further offline on this. I'm just worried we have a very tight time constraint now, and we've used up almost a full hour of this call, way in excess of what we had allocated time wise. So I think we must move on at this point. Lisa, please.
Sorry, Alan, that's an old hand.
Okay. And in terms of action items, we have a plan to put in place a meeting for after the EPDP meeting in Los Angeles. We'll see what the logistics detail look at a little bit later. All right, back to you, Lisa. I made a proposal to keep the recommendation in, but put a caveat underneath it. How does the rest of the team feel about that? We have two choices, either pull the recommendation altogether or leave it in saying we're looking at it, but we are doing further study. Quick show of hands or yays or nays? Somebody?
Susan saying leave it in.
Okay, so leave it in, and we'll put a caveat in. Lisa and I can worry about the wording if you didn't capture what I said. Let's go on to the next item, please. I'll point out we should have been at minute 27 of the call at this point. We are now at 51.
And, Alan, this is Lisa. I think that was the portion of the call that we were hoping to have Compliance and GDG join us. So, although I think everyone is welcome to stay, that was the end of our questions regarding ours.
Thank you, Lisa. We're gonna drop from the call unless you need us.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome to stay. You're welcome to drop your call.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
And this is Lisa. I'll speak to this slide briefly and then maybe ask Susan to elaborate. What's shown on the slide is alternative text proposed by Volker for a recommendation that is currently, I think, in the Objective 6 section. Volker did recommend a number of editorial changes to the body of the recommendation, which I believe Susan incorporated in the draft, but because some of the changes actually affected the recommendation text that we'd already agreed on, we wanted to bring that back to the plenary. Susan, did you have anything to add?
Yes, thank you, Lisa. So I think the biggest change is the 15%, but it would be good. I don't know if we have the latest version that we agreed upon of this recommendation. Did that make it into a slide or not?
No, Susan, but we can pull that up. Would you like it up?
Yeah, I mean, it would be good to compare, and to be honest, I didn't review this morning. So Volker's requesting that it was 10% of all GTs, DLD domain registrations are found to lack data in the registrant field. So that number was 10% that we agreed upon in Brussels, and he upped that to 15%, which makes it a higher threshold. There's, you know, GDD gave us a number of 180 million domain names. So 10% was 180,000. So this puts it, I don't know, you guys have to do the math. I'm not good at math. So, you know, that's probably a quarter of a million, somewhere in there, at this new level. And I think the last sentence, the board should initiate action to, intended to ensure, no, maybe not. I'm sorry. I need the other, you know,
Susan,
need to be able to compare.
Susan, if I can interrupt.
Sure.
10% is 10% of what number? What is the rough number we talk about, total number of GTLDs?
GDD's number was 180 million.
Okay. So I'm sorry. That was 180 million. Okay. Sorry. I misheard you. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'm sort of rambling this morning. 15% would be 10% would be 180,000 of that 180 million. So that seemed like a sufficient number to me, that if they found, you know, that many records without information in it. Now, GDD did point out in the report that actually the, you know, what they are seeing is less, a lot less than that, like even less than 1%. So this may be an issue, may not be an issue, but considering they're just taking a sampling of, and it is a sampling that, you know, I mean, they have their methodology for this, but, you know, it could be that they are missing a bunch of records that, you know, do not have the information. I think they need to do a bigger, they're looking at 200,000 for their ARS report and coming up with a very low figure. So it seems to me that, you know, it's definitely worth looking at a large, number of domain names. But what does the group feel about changing that from 10% to 15%?
Lisa, you have your hand up and then me.
Yeah, I'll just call everyone's attention to the chat pod at lower right, where I've copied the text of the agreement as previously agreed. And I believe the 12-month period was added during our last plenary. The 10% has been there for 2 weeks, I think. And then the additional change was the last three lines that you see on the slide, provided that such action does not unduly impact the rights of registrants, et cetera. Back to you.
Yeah. First on the 15%. So we're only looking at records that do not, that have an empty registrant field. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Do we have any evidence of what we think that number would be? I don't think I've ever seen one. Not that I've looked at millions.
I haven't either. I probably have, but reported those as inaccurate because didn't understand that they didn't have to, may not have to comply. So in the ARS report, which takes from the body of all domain names their sampling, they say this issue is probably less than 1%, right? But if they did a similar sampling of 2009 registrations or the grandfather domains, which are basically any of those, I don't think it's a real clear picture where that line is, but you've got a rough line of, you know, registered before 2013. If you took a sampling of those and looked to see, then you'd have a better idea of what, if this was an issue or not, because you don't have all of the ones that have to be compliant, you know, mixed in. So I just think it's something they should look at and maybe figure out if it's a problem or not.
Okay. The number of GTLDs in 2013 is a number we could establish. I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure there's a number somewhere. Let's say it's half of the total 180 inventory. And it's probably somewhere in that area, I'm guessing.
No, because the $180 million is, we specifically asked GDD how many grandfather domains are there.
They came back
with $180 million.
There's
probably twice. I can't give you the number right off the top of my head. On I could tell you .com. I can look that up really quick. But
we know that's about $110 million, $120 million.
No,
$130 million maybe.
Can I say something?
That number is well established and easy to find out, and I've looked at that recently for reasons I won't go into today. But it's in the order of 100 and something million, a low something. So we have 300 million domains, let's say. A little over 50 of them, 50% of them, are grandfathered. If of the total population only 1%, let's say, if I think that was the number you gave, does not have registrant data, if all of those are grouped in the grandfathered ones, then it's 2%.
And so
that sounds like the number is completely irrelevant, the 10 or 15%.
Yeah, so the VeriSign report says there's 339 million across all TLDs. Now, what I'm not reading right now is to find out. I don't think they're talking about CCTLDs.
No, it's just the GTLDs.
So it sounds like Carlton's trying to.
And, well, Volker had his hand up first. Oh, Volker and then Carlton.
Okay.
Yes, just to explain what my reasoning was to make 15% then rather than 10%, I looked at the graph of decline in grandfather domains through the ARS studies over the past years, and I found that leaving it at 10% would not necessarily give us a number that would ultimately be too far off from what the natural progression would be, whereas at 15%, we would be looking at a number that would indicate that the progress had been slowing down in the past, and therefore further action might be necessary to bring those domain names under the same umbrella, under the same policy umbrella. I think that was the main reasoning for raising that number when I looked at the numbers that we had. Even though we're not there yet, I would just like to go a bit into detail on the last three lines, because Carlton also made a humorous remark by email. I do not want this to be understood in a way to defang in any way any recommendations we make. I just would like to prevent some of the effects that the 2013 RAA new requirements had on some registrants. When faced with a binary decision of either suspend or delete such domain names where updates were not provided in a very short amount of time, that could cause, has caused a lot of harm with registrants. And therefore, I would like to see a bit more options presentable, what could happen to such domain names that are found to be deficient that would not have these binary options of suspending or deleting the domain names in case no action is taken. Because in many cases, these are very old registrations, and the registrant has no communication with the registrar other than paying their invoices once a month and ignore everything else the registrar sends them, simply because everything's working fine and they have no expectation that anything would be changing. That's the main drive behind that. Also, having experienced the 2013 RAA negotiations, where we were basically forced to accept this binary option in the first place, basically with the reasoning that this was what the first review team had demanded, and ICANN wasn't in no position to change the recommendation or to deviate from the intent. So I would just like to see more options, and by using that language,
Volker, can I ask you to wrap up? We're really running out of time.
I was just wrapping up. by that language, I feel that IKEA is given more options when thinking about what to do and how to implement this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have a timer in this Adobe Connect room, but I ask people please to be brief. But I have to respond to Volker. Volker, you were talking about records that are deficient. This recommendation is talking about records that do not have a registrant field. They're very different things. And
well,
So I think we need clarity what it is we're talking about, because I think you're talking about something different than what Susan had in her original recommendation.
The recommendation says that lack data in the registrant field. That, to me, does not say that it has to lack all data. It just could lack certain parts of the data. If it's just missing the email address, it's still lacking data. So that's what I was assuming this recommendation.
All right. Susan, for clarity, are you talking about the registrant name data or any of the registrant data?
I am talking about the 2009 RAA. That's a good point. We could clarify exactly what that is.
Okay, so you're talking about the grandfathering that's done in the 2013 using 2009, the differences there. So it's talking about mm-hmm. more than just the registrant name. Carlton?
Yes, thank you, Alan. We're talking about more than registrant name. If we agree that it's good policy to have a single look and feel for those records, then it makes sense for us to say, let us have a position where, regardless of what year you have this domain name registered, you must have one look and feel for the unit record. Volker has been saying that number, that is the result of the differences, has been going down and down year and year. All was intended was to say, let's put a date when we would wish to see all of the records created. And to me, having more than that is frivolous. So that's one, for example. I didn't like Volker's last three lines with this provider. It gave too much big room and leeway for somebody not to comply. I just think we should say we should have a single look and feel for his record by this date, and that's it.
Thank you, Carlton. Thank you, Carlton. I see Lisa has her hand up. I'm going to put a suggestion on the table akin to the last one. I suggest that we revert back to the previous version with 10% and excluding the terms that I will not describe the way Carlton did at the end, and add a statement saying we are still debating what the threshold should be and attempting to understand impact on registrants' rights. Lisa?
Thank you, Alan. That's essentially what I was going to suggest, with the exception that I was going to suggest we put in 10 to 15% just to sort of allow for compromise. But I think what you suggested...
I consider that a friendly amendment. Can we agree on that? So we're making it clear this is not a firm recommendation. We want to understand the impact, and we want to settle the number. I see still have Carlton and Sam and Volker's hands up. Do we have general agreement to move ahead under that proviso? Does anyone feel exceedingly uncomfortable? Hearing nothing, we have a decision. Let's move on to the next item, please. Next one is mine. It is the bylaw recommendation. Let me put some words into the chat that I came up with as a, again, leaving a recommendation but adding a note to it. Sorry, I can't seem to hit enter on my computer at the moment. Lisa, I'm going to put this in our Skype chat, the leadership Skype chat. It doesn't seem to work if I paste it into the chat box for some reason. Hold on.
Go ahead. We'll copy it.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the Leadership Sky chat.
Or just chat it to me. I'll copy it in.
Well, here it is. There you go. I'll read it while Lisa's copying. The review team is still debating whether a new bylaw requirement should be inserted requiring the review of privacy and data transfer issues in place of the relatively weaker requirement to review safeguarding of registered data. Community input is welcome. My rationale for that is I believe we should never have made reference to the OECD guidelines. That was the suggestion of one person in the CCWG accountability. It was not particularly supported, but no one felt had the energy to fight it. And I believe referencing a relatively old document, even if it's periodically amended, in light of a world where we now have real live regulations and laws, is not the appropriate reference point. I think it is very reasonable that the review bylaws talk about the issue, and I think safeguarding registrant data meets that. But if we want something more specific, then I suggest that we replace the OECD one with a more generic one, and not reference the OECD documents at all specifically. I open the floor. Volker was the one who objected to removing the OECD reference. Does the lack of hands mean we want to make some sort of statement at all, or leave it as it is today without the caveat? Volker, please go ahead.
Yes, and I understand exactly what your issue is with this, and I'm not sure I disagree in principle. However, I feel that removing this only requirements to take into the data protection and privacy in the bylaws at that stage would be the wrong move to make. But I don't know what to exactly replace it with. So I'd rather see it stay as it is than be removed in its entirety and leave future generations to debate whether to include a new reference. I'd rather see this replaced with language that can go forward into the future but makes the same provisions, has the same background, the same ideas at heart, so to say. I agree that the OECD reference could be struck. However, that guidelines on the protection of privacy transport of personal data in general should stay, and there should just be something more up to date to replace it with.
Well, but that's essentially what I'm saying in my caveat, that we will add a replacement clause recommend that a replacement clause be written in the bylaws. We could either try to craft that or simply say what it should contain and let bylaw drafters craft it. We have a choice that we can make between now and December. But we're saying we do want a thing, but it shouldn't be a specific reference to the OECD ones.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Okay, let's go ahead then. We have agreement. Stephanie had her hand up. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
I really think that leaving it vague is just going to solicit comments that we aren't going to be able to effectively deal with. The reason that the OECD reference is in there, I presume it's because there is a reference historically in the documentation on who is the U.S. government has always put in a clause about the OECD guidelines, but has not addressed data protection law as it exists. So I think that perpetuating this is unfortunate, and I think we could probably come up with language that would basically explain that there has been language in the bylaws regarding reference to the OECD, but that given all the other caveats we include in the report about the reality of compliance with GDPR, this seems to be in need of replacement with references to data protection law. And while the OECD guidelines were updated in 2013, I believe, the Council of Europe's binding Convention 108 has more recently been updated, and that's more an international instrument than the OECD guidelines.
Yeah,
so
what I'm
basically saying is I think we open ourselves up to getting all kinds of comments, which we won't be able to deal with. We should sort of close it down by providing language.
Well, I don't think we're going to provide language for this interim report. We don't have the time to do that, and I don't think we have the time to debate it. I'm happy to say we will put language in. To be clear, the affirmation of commitments made no reference to the OECD guidelines. That was added specifically during the CCWG accountability. And I don't see a way forward other than to say we are still looking at it. I don't mind saying at this point we're still debating, but we intend to replace this with a bylaw with that doesn't make a lot of sense because in that case they're still debating. Explain why we have a recommendation. We have a placeholder recommendation. If people prefer, we can change this to say we plan to remove the OECD and replace it with a more specific, a comparable requirement that does not not make reference to specific changeable standard. And if you're happy with that, we can certainly craft some words like that. Essentially, take out the word debating and say we will replace it. Does that make you happier?
It makes me slightly happier, but I still think you're going to get a lot of spurious, non-workable suggestions. So, for instance, it has to be carefully worded because you cannot compel governments to pass laws.
No, we can't.
There has to be language around the convention because the convention requires law. You cannot compel governments to comply with a law that doesn't apply in their jurisdiction.
Nor can we ensure that we have uniform laws around the world.
Exactly. So, and this is why I think, we're going to get a whole lot of, oh, you should do this, you should do that, and nobody understands exactly how difficult that is. I mean, I will propose something and send it to you if that, because I think weasel words are important here. We've got to make sure that we recognize that this is very lame and needs to be replaced, but that the problem is a real one. So I'll let you get on with business.
But there's no way we can come to an agreement on the words and make sure it passes legal muster. And I don't think we're trying to draft the bylaw here. I think we're trying to say there must be a replacement which is not OECD specific, but connotes the same intent.
Bylaw either.
That's it. It's not an OECD specific, but it connotes the same intent.
We need to make a decision. We either go ahead with what is there now, saying we are withdrawing it and debating replacing it, or we will replace. I sense the tone of this group is that we go with the we will replace. I have Lisa, if you're trying to offer a answer. Sorry, I just noticed your hand is up.
Yes, thanks, Alan. I've put in chat at the lower right the actual recommendation that you proposed, Alan, which was to remove the bylaws section. I think what you're suggesting now is that be reworded to replace and then to add the explanation that you suggested.
That's correct. That is, we're going to replace it. We are not providing the specific draft recommendation, but the intent of the recommendation will be. Or alternately, we can make a recommendation that it be replaced
and a footnote saying the details still to be decided. Does that make people be even more comfortable?
Sure.
Stephanie?
I prefer to go under the roadmap, Alan, tell you the truth.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure I know what that means, Carlton.
You said that with the OECD guidelines, the reference is dated, we think it should be replaced with something that is more along the same lines, but it's certainly
Okay, Stephanie says she's going to come up with language. Lisa points out we need language now. Let me try to craft something on the fly, something I absolutely hate doing. We are going to eliminate the safeguarding requirement. We will eliminate the OECD requirement, the OECD clause in the bylaws, and replace the OECD clause in the bylaws with a more generic requirement that preserves the intent but does not reference specific potentially outdated guidelines going forward.
Yes.
Stephanie, can you live with something like that? I see Stephanie's hand. I don't see Stephanie typing. And Eric is saying we can leave the clause in there. I would really prefer not to have the ICANN bylaws refer to this specific guidelines. That only causes confusion when someone may interpret it later on in a way that is points too close to those and not to the regulations and laws that were around the world that we have to factor on. All right, I will come up with some words after this call. If anyone has any strong objections to them, please suggest replacement words. Otherwise, they will go into the report for approval next Monday. And that's an action item for me. And I will be referring to the recording of this call, so I would appreciate if staff try to make that available as quickly as possible. Next item, law enforcement needs. We don't have Thomas here. We don't have Catherine here unless she's on the bridge. Lisa, can you lead us through it, please?
Sure. point out, so in our last plenary call, and actually the preceding one, we had some discussion about these two recommendations that Catherine had formulated. 2 weeks ago, they were split into two recommendations. In our last plenary call, I think most of the conversation or concern revolved around the very last bit of LE2, which was how to refer to cybersecurity professionals. And so the language that's reflected here on the screen, that the ICANN board should resolve that such surveys or studies be conducted by ICANN, to be conducted by ICANN, also extend to other RDS who is users, such as cybersecurity professionals working with law enforcement. We need to actually decide if we have consensus on that or any objections on that at this point.
It's Alan. Stephanie, your hand is up. I don't know if it's a new one or not. I don't think it is. My only concern with this is the cybersecurity professionals working with law enforcement is the example, but the generic one is other who is users, which I think is far too wide. I don't think the intent was to widen it that large. I know Catherine did say on a previous call that it might well include things like intellectual property people trying to enforce rights, but just completely any other user I find a little bit too wide.
Uh,
I'd be happy to say in cybersecurity professionals, knowing that is not a defined term right now, and others working with law enforcement. Volker, please go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah, I'm not very happy with leaving an undefined term, and that's because somebody will then define it and make that and run with that definition. So I'd rather have a term that's very, very closely framed. In if we don't even know whom we want to benefit from this, then why are we making the recommendation in the first place? Is my thinking. Either we know who we want to benefit from this, or we don't, and in that case, we have no business making the recommendation. And one further possible edit, I would, in the first recommendation part, I would frame the word needs of law enforcement as legitimate needs of law enforcement, because law enforcement has a lot of needs, but not all of them are legitimate, and we should only be focusing on those that are. Okay, that's it. Brief enough.
Thank you. I'm not sure we could define legitimate, but it is in the bylaws right now, so I'm happy to use it. I would suggest for LE2 that we say, I can broadly resolve that surveys and/or studies be conducted by, be extended to other U.S. RDS who is users such as, right now, the working with law enforcement is not clear what it modifies. Is it modifying law enforcement, but there may be others that we're extending it to that do not work with law enforcement, or is extended to others working with law enforcement, such as cybersecurity professionals? I would suggest the latter is what we want to say. That is, extend to other RDS who is users working with law enforcement, such as cybersecurity professionals. Remember, we are not granting rights here. We are simply saying extend a survey. So I don't think we need to be worried about exactly how it's defined. It will have to be defined in such a way so the survey has meaning. But I'm not sure it matters exactly how it's defined. That's for the interpretation of the survey. So I suggest we invert the two clauses, that is, put law enforcement modifying RDS who is users, and then such as cybersecurity professionals, and leave it be. Is that sufficiently innocuous? It may not be as wide a group as Catherine and her colleagues want to extend it to. It may be too wide for some, but it's only a survey we're talking about. Volker, please go ahead.
Just a brief comment. As long as we are making it clear in the reasoning that this is just a survey, and no matter what the survey comes up with, we are not recommending that any further rights or any further decisions be based on this recommendation or any implied intent of this recommendation other than making a survey should follow after that survey has been made. So,
yeah, well, Volker, we're not saying what to do with it. I would like to think if we go to the trouble of paying for a survey, we may actually use the results. But I don't think we're predicting how they should be used or what the impact should be used. I think that's
maybe
a debate that has to be made afterwards. And remember, in the case of Europe, we're not setting the rules. The data commissioners are. All we can do is propose.
I think we could even be clear in saying that the survey should be a basis for a next review team or a subsequent review team. I think I could live with that. So we clearly say what that survey is to be used for and not leave it up for third parties to make claims of what they think this should be used for.
I think it's good.
These things have a tendency to become to get a life of their own. And,
I think it's going to be used for making decisions, whether it's by a review team 5 years from now or some other decision that has to be made 3 years from now as the smoke starts to clear. I don't think we can require someone to ignore the results.
but I don't think our intent is anything other than to make informed decisions. I think we have a general agreement here, and we may need to clarify the words of why we're doing this if it's not already clear there. Lisa, you want to get in, and I see you want to return to the OECD.
I wanted to get into, and others are talking about OECD in chat, but I wanted to get in and show you, and that didn't quite do it, in chat, the actual language of the recommendation that I'd like to call for consensus on based on what I think you said.
Please go ahead.
If you could confirm that's what you wanted, and then we'll call for objections.
I will read it as I'm confirming or as I'm thinking about it. The ICANN board should resolve that such surveys and or studies be conducted by ICANN also be extended to other RDS users working with law enforcement, such as cybersecurity professionals. Yes, that is what I was talking about for this one.
And are, do we have any objections to that language?
No objection, just not very comfortable.
And Stephanie says, why should we pay for something for cybersecurity professionals? Because we're the custodian of who is. That's why we're doing all of this. We have people typing. Not very comfortable with what term, Erica?
She said cybersecurity professionals is such a broad term. So it sounds like we have Erica, Stephanie, and Volker somewhat uncomfortable with that term.
Can someone come up with a better term or simply put a caveat saying this will have to be defined to the community's comfort?
We said they're working with law enforcement.
Carlton, I did not make out what you said.
The wording that Lisa puts up says that they are those that are working with law enforcement, the smaller group, specifically.
Stephanie, is that a new hand?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, and I'll point out we are destined at this point to go on for at least 2.5 hours.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I just want to register on the record here that I'm not really comfortable with the way we have worded this. It really sounds as if we are recommending that the ICANN board do surveys that are designed to solve the data requirements of third parties. And, you know, we are focused on cybersecurity professionals and law enforcement. But, I mean, really, law enforcement needs to do its own survey of what data it needs to fight crime, not ICANN. We're not in that business, you know. And it gets even more attenuated when you start doing it for independent companies. Why on earth should we do surveys for a company like Symantec? Which is basically what you're doing if you are responding to APWG requests for data analysis. I'm just raising it. I think it's outside of the remit of ICANN.
Are you suggesting that us doing surveys of law enforcement is outside the remit of ICANN?
I'm suggesting that the way you word this is extremely important. If it sounds like they are coming to you saying, we want you to do this survey on our needs, then you are responding to third-party requests to use ICANN public interest funds for third parties.
We are doing this. Excuse me. We are doing this work because the bylaws require us to assess whether we are meeting the needs of law enforcement with regard to RDS. Law enforcement has said they work closely with a number of people, and we should consider, and I'm happy to change the recommendation that ICANN board should consider extending surveys as a as opposed to resolve, to a wider community that works closely with law enforcement?
I think it would be better to say that the board should collaborate with RDS users such as law enforcement and cybersecurity professionals to determine what data needs to be surveyed.
I'm not sure I could even parse that.
Well,
Lisa, please go ahead.
Type it into the chat.
No,
thank you, Alan. Sorry, I'm talking on top of Carlton. This is Lisa for the transcript. I've just typed into the chat, but I think there is some ambiguity about what such surveys or studies is referring to, and Stephanie is interpreting that to mean surveys or studies about data needs. And I believe the intention was that it be a reference back to LE1, which was surveys to inform future assessment on the effectiveness of RDS who is in meeting those needs.
And I believe we saw, I believe we can soften it to say the board should consider.
I agree with the softening, and this is what I was going to point out. It was LE1, which we were going back because it's a recommendation in the dialogue of information. And the second portion of it refers to those surveys and the use of the outputs of those surveys to certain targeted groups. That's what this is about.
Okay, and Erica is saying in the chat that she would remove the reference to cybersecurity professionals, that is, just those working with law enforcement, and not be specific as to who they are. I can live with that.
I can live with that.
Lisa, can you do something else on the fly?
Yes, give me just a second. Okay, I've just put something in chat.
ICANN board should consider extending such surveys and or studies to other RDS who is users working with law enforcement. I can accept that. Stephanie, is that a new hand? Who the board collaborates with to make a decision, I think, is up to the board. I don't think we can dictate that. I can certainly live with adding the reference to the effectiveness of who is in meeting needs, which is repetitive. Volker?
It's that is already contained in LE1. We don't need to repeat that in LE2.
Right. We can make a reference to LE1. Volker, please.
I think what you just said, even though you think it is repetitive, I think that provides some of the clarity that I'm still missing. By referencing that any such survey should still of such third parties should still focus on the needs of these law enforcement agencies that we are trying to empower, that we are trying to see if their needs are being met, that makes, I think, the difference between me being very uncomfortable with being able to accept it happily. I think that addition is what makes a big difference to me, at least. Otherwise, I'm not willing to die on that hill, but that it would be helpful.
Okay, I'm moderately happy with what Lisa has. I would make one modification to it. The ICANN board should consider conducting and extending such surveys, because right now we're not saying the board should conduct surveys at all, and the conducting was the operative verb in LE2 before, should consider conducting and extending such surveys and or studies as described in LE1 to other RDS who is users working with law enforcement. Can we live with that? I didn't say it's perfect. This is a draft report.
I can live with it.
Stephanie says we should avoid recommending that ICANN continue to spend money on surveys for law enforcement. Stephanie, as long as it's in the bylaws, a survey is a valid way of doing things, and that's how the review team chose to do this. I think we've got an agreement that from everyone except Stephanie. Is that correct?
How else would they know if they're meeting the legislative needs of law enforcement if they don't ask the question?
Yeah, look. This review team has gone forward and done a survey, and we believe it is it provides valid information. I don't think we can go back with that. Stephanie, one last comment. At this point, I think we have agreement from everyone. You're, of course, welcome to submit a comment to this when we publish the draft report, or be silent and do it going forward. Okay, I think we have closure here, assuming we captured the very last version of it. That is what Lisa posted. Okay, and you modified that to be conducting. Thank you. Next item, Lisa.
Thank you, whoever's advancing the slides. I think that brings us to strategic priority. The reason for putting up the strategic priority recommendations was simply to reconfirm that we had full agreement on this and to raise some points that Catherine had. Unfortunately, Catherine is not with us. Can you advance one slide, please? There we go. Catherine attempted to address the points that Stephanie raised on our last call, or perhaps it was, yes, it was our last call. These two points that had been raised. I guess I would suggest, given that Catherine's not with us, that if Stephanie still has these concerns or others share them, that you try to address these points in your own comments and edits on this section, which we will hopefully finalize on our next call.
Okay. Two issues listed, if I can read them. The issue of how to criticize implementation of recommendations which may have been impossible to measure from the start. There's only one recommendation which was claimed to be impossible to implement. I'm not quite sure what impossible to measure is. And number two is, how do we want to deal with the previous review team's recommendations? My recollection from the last face-to-face that we would clarify somewhere they were not superseded by the present report, but I may be wrong. To the extent that ICANN chooses to continue to implement any previous recommendation, that is their call. Officially, ICANN has said they're all implemented and it's a done deal. I presume on things like ARS they will continue to do it because it's now become part of business as usual until they decide, or someone decides, that it's not needed anymore. I believe, to the extent that we believe a recommendation was not implemented, if we expect them to continue work on that and do it further, then I believe we need new recommendations. An example of that is the one that we're doing on outreach, saying you did a really nice job of rewriting all this, now do it again. And, by the way, integrate it well into the rest of the stuff which you didn't do well last time. So I do not believe that implicit in everything we're doing is the full set of the last 16 recommendations. Certainly, based on how previous second review teams and ATRT is the only such example, they did not presume that the previous recommendations were still operable other than to the extent that they created new standing procedures or processes.
Alan, this is Lisa, if I might.
Please.
I believe that, although you could ask this question more broadly, I believe the specific question was in reference to the strategic priority recommendations, and that in our face-to-face we did decide that we wanted to reiterate that those recommendations still stand, that they're ongoing, not even the ones that were completed are ongoing, and then offer additional recommendations. And that probably wasn't stated that clearly in the draft.
If the existing recommendations do not imply that, you know, we're basically saying they did not make it a strategic priority, and I think our new recommendations reinforce that. So I think we're essentially repeating the last recommendation to make it a strategic priority, but providing more guidance, are we not? I don't have the recommendations in front of me.
I believe that was the intent, Alan. I think what Catherine was pointing out is it doesn't state that clearly in the recommendations section.
Is it possible to pull those recommendations up quickly?
Sure.
In the chat, Stephanie is saying the gist of her argument, we should avoid recommendations that cannot be measured. We should avoid declaring something is implemented if we cannot measure it. I think that's a nice ideal. I'm not sure we can guarantee that in all cases, that everything is metrifiable. Although the concept of SMART recommendations says everything should be measurable.
And this is Lisa. The recommendations from strategic priority are on the screen now. R1, 2, and 3.
Okay. The ICANN board should put in place a forward-looking mechanism to monitor possible impacts of RDS from a legislative and policy point of view. To support this mechanism, the board should instruct the ICANN organization to assign responsibility, and the ICANN board should update the charter of the working group. What about if we take recommendation number one to further the treatment of RDS, who is as strategic an ICANN, the board should? Does that work? I see Erica typing. No one else says anything. Erica doesn't understand what I'm saying. The comment was, are we saying in recommendations 1, 2, and 3 of strategic priority that we are reiterating that this should be a strategic priority? Our analysis of the last one was they did not make it a strategic priority, and it was unclear to some people whether we still wanted that requirement to stand, because a past recommendation is not implicitly reiterated by us. So I was trying to do that by saying recommendation number one is to further implementing RDS as a strategic priority in ICANN, which essentially says we are agreeing with the first recommendation, it should be a strategic priority, and continue with the sentence the board should put in place. And Erica agrees. I've seen no negative comments. If we could make the change to R1.1 to that extent. Lisa, have you captured that?
Alan, I've put in text in the chat that would be a clause that would begin recommendation R1.1.
How about to further RDS, ensuring that RDS is a strategic priority?
Is that what you wanted, Alan?
I think that's identical to what you had. I'm just trying to make it a little bit clearer in language. I'm not what sure to further RDS as a strategic priority. I'm just saying to further ensure that IDS is treated as a strategic priority. I'm going for grade 5 language.
All right, I think I might have captured that this time.
And Stephanie says further is not very precise. I think it reads well by just eliminating the word further. Okay, Lisa, what you had minus the word further, we're going with it. Next item. According to our timetable, we are now at 67 minutes, and in fact, we're at 110 minutes. So we have 10 minutes to do the next 53 minutes of work.
The reason that we picked out Common Interface to display here is, as Volker knows, he had to drop off the previous plenary call before we were able to discuss this item. So, Volker, I'll give you the floor to introduce the recommendation, and then we'll call for any changes or objections to it.
Do we still have Volker with us?
Yes, but I think it's mainly unchanged from what we had before. I'm just not seeing the differences at the moment, being a week already, so I could just read through it.
We actually never called for consensus on this in the past several weeks. It just kept on not being the recommendation that we got to.
Then let's ask everyone to read it, and is there anyone have a problem with it?
Okay, so just as the background while you're reading, if you can turn out my voice, this is mainly the question of why there is no data on the request failures for the common interface, and we wanted to change that, make sure that there is data that future review teams have more data available to see why certain lookups fail and what the underlying reasons for that is, and thereby allowing future review teams to or other groups to figure out how to address these issues, or if there are any, if these issues are actually issues or just in between failures that are ingrained in the system.
So essentially we're saying instrument the common WHOIS interface and make use of the results you collect.
Exactly. Gather data on the effectiveness of the interface and make sure that you capture failures of the interface to deliver the expected result of the user, and try to provide more background on why these failures occur without making any judgment on whether these failures are legitimate or illegitimate or what the cause of them are. As in, should it be a compliance issue or not, just to measure the data.
I think this is clear enough as it is. We all will have the ability to refine it going forward. I think all we're saying is this should be done intelligently and information used to make it better, which is what I would have hoped would have been done to begin with. Okay, done. We've now made up 3 minutes. Next one, executive summary. We have 15 minutes on that. I hope it will not take that. As a bit of explanation, that was drafted by me, reviewed by Susan, reviewed initially by Lisa, who made a number of comments which caused a rewrite and, among other things, shortened the history section significantly, and then took my revised version and made a very large number of edits on it, most of which replaced the word who is with RDS bracket who is or something akin to that, and went for standardized capitalization of the term review team. Lisa made a small number of substantive edits, all of which are incorporated in the version you've seen. I'm halfway through going through her edits, and I have made a couple of non-substantive changes along the way. The only substantive one I've made so far is I realize that the rationale we gave for not doing the OECD study in the terms of reference was not exactly what we said in the executive summary, and I've brought it into line. But that's just bringing it into line with what's already in the terms of reference. There may be one or two other minor changes, and we still need to make sure that what is reported in the executive summary in terms of fully implemented, partially implemented, not implemented, matches whatever is in the text. So other than that, I think it's pretty close to go, and I see Lisa has her hand up. I would ask each rapporteur, however, to look at the summary that is in the executive summary, and does that capture, as well as one or two sentences can capture, what it is that the section has done. Lisa? Old hand.
It was actually an old hand, but just to reiterate, so we're on the first page of the executive summary, but if I advance to the summary findings, which begin at the bottom of what is now displayed as page 6 and continues on to page 7 and 8, that is what Alan is asking every rapporteur. Look at your particular paragraph. Make sure you're comfortable that that accurately in one paragraph only summarizes the gist of your issues and findings, issues, and recommendations.
Yes. It is not trying to replicate everything you found, but just trying to give a gut overview of where we are. And, of course, this will be subject to a very thorough review and much more thorough than this one in the final paper, because then it must be accurate here. Accuracy is nice. Any further comments? Stephanie, to be clear, you've suggested comment language for this executive summary or for a suggested OECD recommendation?
Alan, I've copied the block I believe Stephanie is referring to in chat.
Okay.
It was the alternative wording for the OECD, the bylaws change.
The review team notes the OECD guidelines, while remaining relevant as a set of principles, are not useful as a reference point in this particular context, particularly when they're given the focus of TDPR. We recommend the bylaws be examined and a suitable clause created that requires compliance with applicable data protection and best practices. In particular, data transfers must be safeguarded, must safeguard registered data. I will take that and integrate it into the section as best I can. Note that as an action item for me, please. I've heard no comments, negative comments on the executive summary, and then please review your section and make sure it accurately reflects. If it doesn't accurately reflect, please suggest a replacement sentence or two, but keep the length comparable to what is there now, and we'll proceed with the next section. Remember, we must have closure on this report at the next meeting. So anything you're going to send that is altering anything that's in the report must be done within the next day or two. Next one is any objections, edits, comments submitted on the mailing list. Lisa?
What you see in front of you is actually just a summary of the list of sections and the number of recommendations at this point. I would like to point out to you all, although there is a final version of each subgroup report in that subgroup section, at this point, please direct all of your review and comments against the consolidated draft report so that we're all working against the same set of language. As you can see, everything at this point has been submitted. Unfortunately, this chart is out of date. The section on compliance was submitted as well. We do have a couple of objections still on record, the one in data accuracy. Now we have, from today's discussion, one or more on law enforcement needs, and then an objection on the compliance language from Volker's proposed text. And I'm not sure we still have an actual objection there, Volker. Are you still with us? Can you clarify? Do you still have an objection to the compliance recommendation on grandfathering?
I believe the status was we're reverting to the previous one with a note saying we are looking at it and soliciting comments.
Right, correct. I just wanted to know if Volker still had an objection even given that. I'm not sure he's still with us.
No, Volker left. He said he had to drop off.
Yeah.
Right. He must still have AC open. So we'll still continue holding that objection until we get his confirmation. And then just to point out that our goal for our next plenary call is to actually approve all of these sections. You see the rightmost column. We don't have approval by the full review team, but that is what we're striving for during our next plenary call. And that brings us to the roadmap. The roadmap has us all raising any final comments or edits on this draft report. Of course, this is still a draft report that would go for public comment, so there will still be an opportunity for the full team to tighten up language and to address public comments in what comes in November and December timeframe. But by this Friday, you should raise any comments that you have, any edits that you have for the full review team to see over the weekend. In our next plenary call, I should say over the weekend at the very latest, that our plenary call is to actually address those comments and edits and formally adopt the report.
Thank you.
Alan, do you have anything you want to add?
Only that if you cannot be on that call and you are planning to not agree to everything, that is, we do not, to ensure that we are recording whether we have full consensus or not for every recommendation, for every section. If you are not going to be on the call and believe you have an objection to full consensus, you must make that known ahead of time. We will record partial consensus if necessary, but we cannot take it after the call. Lisa, back to you. Or Al.
Actually, I think I'm returning it to Alice or Jean-Baptiste to read out our AOB and action items.
Thank you, Lisa. And under AOB, we adjusted the confirmation that the fourth face-to-face meeting will take place on from the 10th to the 12th of December in Brussels.
And does constituency travel know about that yet?
Yes, they have been informed.
Okay.
Can we move ahead with...
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. So starting with... data accuracy, so there was an agreement to keep recommendation 5.1 as is, leaders to discuss allocation of budget for a potential meeting with those present for the EPDP meeting with ICANN compliance. ICANN compliance to look into possibility of providing samples, and Alan to produce a note framing recommendation 5.1.
Okay.
On compliance.
May I ask that you also immediately confirm with, we may have gotten it on the call, but make sure that we have confirmation that they, that both compliance and preferably, but not necessarily ARS staff can meet with us on the 27th. I believe it's the 27th.
Okay. Yeah. Which in that. On compliance, for recommendation number two, to be retained as in draft report with edits at 10 to 15%, including a footnote explaining we are seeking input on percentage and impacts on registrants' rights. On OECD-related bylaws amendments, so tentative eliminate the clause on safeguarding and eliminate OECD clause in bylaws and replace both with a new clause which requires assessment, but in a sorry, Lisa, if you are typing, I can't read anymore. But in a generic manner, not specific to a single document. Alan to produce language for recommendation B1 by COB today to propose replacement language, and Alan to call for objections to be sent to review team list by 26th of August. Alan to consider Stephanie's proposed language. The review team notes that the OECD guidelines, while remaining relevant as a set of principles, are not useful as a reference point in this particular context, particularly given the current focus on GDPR and other data protection laws. We recommend that the bylaws be examined and a suitable clause crafted that requires compliance with applicable data protection law and best practice. In particular, data transfers must safeguard registrant data. Community input is welcome. On law enforcement, agreement on recommendation number two as modified, with one objection to both recommendation one and recommendation two. The ICANN board should consider conducting and extending such surveys and or studies as described in recommendation one to other RDS between parentheses with users working with law enforcement. On strategic priority agreement on recommendation 1.1 with edits between brackets to ensure that RDS between parentheses with is treated as a strategic priority. On core interface agreement with recommendation 11.1 as presented in draft report, and on executive summary, pen holders to review paragraph relating to their topics and send any edits that they may have, Alan to finalize the executive summary, and finally on roadmap, all are reminded to send objections, ASAP, and edits by 26th of August. Those who cannot make it to the final consensus call should send objections prior to the call.
Thank you. Any further comments on this? Lisa, could I ask you, are you available later today to go over all of my action items and make sure that we get them done with some clarity?
Sure, of course, Alan. We can take that offline.
Yeah, about 4:30 or 5 o'clock tonight, my time, Eastern time, would be optimal, but we can decide on that on the chat.
Okay, thanks. I would also like to suggest, because we've made small edits to several recommendations, that your support staff take on board to resend the just the summary table of review team recommendations so that you have in one place the current language for all the recommendations.
Can I suggest that you either do redline or post or paste the old and new one in, or something like that, or send the old and the new copies together some way so we can easily reference what has changed?
Yeah, we can certainly easily redline that. And what we'll do, Alan, is hold that till you have the bylaws edit.
Sure.
And then we'll include that in a redline version of just the table of review team recommendations.
Excellent. Thank you, Lisa.
Anything else? And only 9 minutes late, considering we were an hour late at one point. I thank you all for your participation and your brevity towards the end of this call. And we will meet again next week, at which point we'll take a break for a while. Thank you all.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
See you all.